Hello everyone, I'm Anna or One Ring, and welcome to the Call of Legends, a podcast about esports in Portugal. My guest today is Anna, head coach of GeekCase Esports League of Legends team. Hello Anna.
First of all, thank you so much for being here. How are you feeling today?
Well, a bit nervous, but I also want to thank you for inviting me. It was kind of out of the blue, I won't lie.
Let's start with the most important question, I think. D or F for Flash?
Oh, that's... Well, as a Yumi player, I don't use Flash. There you go, I saved myself from this question.
Okay. And what's your favorite champion?
Janna, by far. But yeah, again, I'm a washed up one trick, so yeah. I like her because she's annoying. Like, she's really annoying once you get the hang of her.
Yes, she's indeed.
If I have to make my support in competitive, I'll just say Nautilus because he's just a wall and he's very fat and you cannot get past him. So, yeah, he's fun.
When did you start playing? What was your first game ever?
Oh my god, that was, I think, 6 years ago. And my first game ever was a bot game. My husband introduced me to this game, so he basically let me play on his account a bot game, and he gave me Jinx, and I was terrified of Fiddlesticks bot. Like, I was so scared, because he would just walk up to me and, like, suck the HP bar out of me, and I was, like, screaming in the house, what the hell is this? Get me out! So yeah, that was a very good experience.
But why League of Legends? Why investing so much time on this specific game?
I mean, I played a lot of games throughout the years, and I think I've always came back to League of Legends because they always keep it fresh, and they never just stagnate into a meta or a set of champions that are good. It's always something new. There's always the strategies change, the map changes, the jungle changes, items change. It always keeps it interesting, and I'm a person that gets bored really quickly, so I think that League of Legends is always going to be a game that people are just going to come back to eventually, no matter if other games like Overwatch or what's the other one name? That one when you drop out of the planes. What's it called?
Fortnite,
there you go. Yeah, like, they're called the League of Legends killers, but they just kill, quote-unquote, League for maybe a week or two, and then people just come back to League because something always changes, something's always new. There's a champion, there's a rework.
Yeah.
Fiddlesticks looks creepy now. Thank you.
Terrifying. And how would you describe your experience, your path through the esports industry? Was it planned, or did it happen naturally?
I started off, I think, four or five years ago. I played on a small org in the UK, and I had a lot of fun in the competitive scene. Like, it was, wow, a huge difference from just randomly running up and down in solo queue. And I really enjoyed it, but something wasn't right. And then a friend of mine was like, listen, we just got a better support, but I was thinking maybe if you want to train these guys. And from there on, it was just, yeah, history. Because it blended my love for teaching with my love for video games. And it just felt right. And it was an uphill battle from there, but yeah, that's kind of how it started. I tried to be an actual player. And then when I found out coaching, I was like, oh, okay, this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, so it happened naturally. And what was the key moment to take that next step? It was that moment when your friend asked you to coach the team?
No, it went a bit further. Like, I stayed with that org for a while, and then through League solo queue, I met some students from Aberdeen University in Scotland. And they told me that they had a new old team and that they're looking for someone to coach them. And I was like, well, I'm looking to be a better coach, so why the hell not? And that's when it kind of gave me this taste of competitive from a coach's perspective, you know, to kind of try to bamboozle the enemy team from draft, try to think of the best strategy, to try to guide your players into performing their best in a game. And from there on, I kind of dedicated myself to this, And I would go back in time and do it again, honestly. I think that was the big moment where I had those five kids just basically saying, listen, we're going to fully trust you. And it worked out really well, actually.
Wow. And how did it came the opportunity to work for GeekCase?
Oh, I stopped working with the university team after a year and a half. And then I got picked up by a UK Division 2 team as an analyst because I didn't have that much experience for a head coach. And let's say I didn't really agree with the head coach, and I made my opinions very clear to management, ending up like one day before playoffs to, hey, you've just been promoted to head coach. I was like, what? Hello? We ended up winning the whole thing. And because I really got along with the team and I really understood what makes them click. So we were able to work really smoothly without even scrimming or without even having practice. We just met on the day of playoffs and it was like, all right, we're going to do this. And it worked. And we just steamrolled through playoffs. We won the whole thing. And then I was out of a job again. And the current top laner of GeekCase, Ken Ruto, messaged me a couple of weeks after when I was trying to collaborate with an organization right now that's on the Dutch scene, saying that, hey, look, you know, I'm on this Portuguese Division 1 team and they need a coach. And I was wondering if you're free, like if you're contracted. I'm like, no. So I tried out for GeekCase and here I am.
Wow. And what a split they did this year. They developed pretty good from the beginning of the split till the...
Yeah, the growth was great. I'm not going to lie. Like the whole hero march was fantastic. You know, the underdog story, it was rewritten on the Portuguese scene and I was very happy to be part of it. But I'm not going to lie that it wasn't the start that everybody expected from us. We were very confident coming into the split and then we kind of forgot the fact that we have a couple of players on our team, especially Eric, who subbed for Ken in the inaugural days. Yeah. That don't have competitive experience, and it showed because they just got so nervous that yeah, it went a bit downhill from there. But afterwards, I'm just gonna like keep talking to say the importance of performance coaching. I have a friend, Ray, we even announced him on Twitter, that worked with us during the spring split towards playoffs. And he brought in the spice of performance coaching that's more based on psychology and more based on understanding the individual player as a person, not as a robot. And it really helped. Like, I think the best example from the team is Kieran, how he started off and everybody was making fun of him. And the community was like, wow, this guy is so bad and he has no idea what he's doing. And then both me and that coach, we worked very closely with him and he developed into everybody saying, all right, Kieran is fucking smurfing. Oh, sorry, I used a bad word.
But that was exactly the question I was bringing it up next. So what are the elements you should be aware of as a player in terms of health, both physically and mentally? And how does that impact your gameplay?
I mean, I can sit around and talk about this basically all day, to be fair. I think it's very important that a player understands that they're not perfect and they understand that emotions and being nervous is part of the job. So, and I think this is something that they didn't expect. I know Kieran didn't expect this. He's like, I know I'm nervous, but I never expected it to be like this overwhelming and take full control of me and cloud my judgment and make me make so many mistakes. I think there's a reason why pro teams on LEC or LCS, LCK, and so forward have these three very clear categories of coaching. Like you have the head coach that kind of supervises everything. You have the performance coach that just focuses on how player actually performs and why from an exterior point of view they perform like that. And then you have a health coach that makes sure that their body is equipped with the tools to perform well to win games. And it's like all three of these departments cannot live without each other. It's like the symbiosis development in between these three coaches. And I find it great because it was the first time I worked side by side with a performance coach. Like I worked with this guy before, but not as a performance coach. And it was a completely different view on how am I supposed to approach these emotional issues that players have, these confidence issues that players have.
So can you describe a bit your workday as as the head coach of the team?
Well, right now, thank you, Riot, for Crash. My workday is pretty chill, considering that we can barely get scrims in, because every time we do, it takes us 2 hours to get into a lobby, and not everybody has a TR tab. During the split, it was wake up in the morning, watch all of the games that were played that week, take notes of draft, and that was basically every week. Like, I would constantly rewrite the drafts just to have them fresh in my mind with, this is what they played, this is what their tendencies are. Do solo sessions with the players, make sure that they're okay, make sure that their mistakes are being corrected, make sure that they improve, that we talk about everything that's supposed to be talked about for their role. Get scrims going, try to balance the fun factor with the learning factor in scrims, and at night fall asleep so fast that you didn't even realize you hit the pillow.
So you have to work really close with the analysts, and how does that...
We have an analyst board that's kind of analyst / manager. Mostly, I do the... Basically, an analyst kind of takes the data and puts it together in a program, and you have... The best example is, imagine you have a week where you have 4 scrim blocks, right? And out of those 4 scrim blocks, you have a player that died randomly face-checking 40% of the time. That's basically what an analyst does. What I do is I have my trusty notebook with my pen. I actually don't use Google Docs that much, where I write all of these things down, and then I make like a resume at the end of the week for myself. With this analyst coming in, it was a huge help because he did exactly the same thing, but he managed to structure it for me in a document, making my work easier. But I haven't really worked with an analyst per se to take this workload off me. I'm sharing it with them, and I genuinely think that saying that you're an analyst, you really need to have very good IT knowledge, because you are required to develop that program that makes it easier for both you, the coach, the performance coach, the health coach, and so on.
And did coaching change your perception about video games, and how?
I mean, it didn't really change the perception about video games, because when it comes to MOBAs, I just play League. But it did change my perception about how you're supposed to teach League of Legends, and to understand that I think every single player has the story behind them of they not necessarily failed at something, but something happened in their life that brought them here. And if you understand that and you know how to work off that, off the drive that they have for competing, I think that's the biggest lesson I've learned. Of course, alongside with the fact that I'm always trash and I always need to get better, but that's in every job, really.
And how do your friends and family see your career, especially those who have no contact with esports or video games whatsoever? Did you ever feel you weren't taken seriously?
Well, I'm lucky to say that my friends are all gamers. I mean, my husband is a hardcore gamer, so he understands perfectly. I can say about my parents, when I said I'm working in esports, they're like, what's that? Imagine football, but you play it with a keyboard. It was like the best description I could. And it took them a very long time to take it seriously. But then I was very proud of my mother. She actually did a lot of research on this and then called me again. It's like, all right, I've read everything. I'm ready to discuss it about you and have something in common with you. I'm like, woo, let's go.
Yeah, because there's this this perception that an esports is not a real sport as well.
I mean, there've been so many discussions about this, to be fair, and I can't say I understand the side of it's not really a sport, because it's a sport of the mind and it's quite different from actual sports. The best example I was given was, in a normal sport, imagine football, you actually get to see the person's reaction, like your enemy's reaction, with they know they messed up, or they know they did a good play, or that smirk on their face where you know that they have something planned and they have an ace up their sleeve and you just cannot touch it. Whereas in League of Legends, it's all about reading how the player moves in game, and it's harder. You actually need to have an intellect, a high intellect, to be able to perform this game at a high level. And people who don't understand that, no offense to them, I feel that they're just narrow-minded and they live on the old ideals of a sport needs to be you actually physically doing something than a sport of the mind. And then on the other hand, you have athletes that are considered math athletes or chemist athletes, and you're like, well, what's the difference between those and my guys?
Yes, definitely. So what kind of skills does a League of Legends player acquire and develop throughout his career?
I think the most important one is patience and kind of thinking outside of yourself. I think the best example is you saw the last video for Worlds, the music video for Worlds, where it said that you shouldn't let your demons get the best of you. I think if you manage to kind of take yourself out of your body and look at yourself and be very critical about what you're doing and also understand that at the end of the day, you are human, is the most important quality of an esports player, whether it is a coach or an actual player.
How would you describe the state of esports in Portugal? So from what you told me before, you started in the UK scene. So what are the biggest differences?
I think UK has a lot of exposure because in Division 1, they have Fnatic Academy and Excel Academy, and they have players like Kasing and Kjarnan there that just through their name and their brand bring a lot of publicity and a lot of exposure for the scene. Whereas in Portugal, we will always be in the shadow of the LVP. It's kind of, we're the small bully brother of the Spanish scene. I also think that there's a lot of lack of motivation from orgs here, and especially from managers, to expand their horizons, look for imports, try to find talent in non-Division 1 players. It has become this very close circle of privileged people. Once you enter it, you have some rights, and to enter it is very, very difficult from a player's perspective. So I genuinely think that the issue with Portuguese esports scene is the fact that they don't have any exposure, but in the same time, they're not really working hard enough to have that exposure. They're not looking at all of the facets of the issue to get that exposure, to get the word out that, hey, look, see, we have a guy in the LEC and he's a pretty kick-ass AD carry. But no, they don't work off that. There's no recognition for the fact that this scene at the end of the day has a lot of talented players. And it's pretty sad, to be fair.
So you think here the organizations should have more impact in the development of, or in the...
More impact in the exposure of their org, not just be content with what you have and say, yeah, sure, it's great, I'll just stick to this, instead of going, no, I want more. Like, I think the best example is For The Win, right? They really, yeah, really tried to get into the play-in stage for the play-in stage for EU Master. Same with AGN. I mean, they surprised everybody beating For The Win, right? And that shows that the org actually invested a lot of resources in their players to get them to the point of beating For The Win and actually claiming the Cup of Portugal. And then you have, I think, the rest of the orgs where it's slow, right? From Geekace's perspective, I think that they're doing a great job trying to get exposure for the org. And I didn't work with the other orgs, so basically I think I'm a bit subjective here, saying that they actually do try, and the tasks that they are placed in front, you know, the obstacles that are in front of them are so difficult to overcome, and it's because of the entire structure of esports. Like, for instance, we're still waiting for Division 2. It's never coming.
So what are the biggest challenges you've had to face within the Portuguese esports industry?
I think the toxicity of the community, not gonna lie. People are very judgy here. Like, they judge you without even asking the question of why did they do this or why did they get here. They don't filter, you know, to get their opinion across as a educated opinion, documented. There we go. A well-documented and thought of opinion. It's just, they just see it and they immediately react on it without thinking that, hey, maybe I'm hurting a player's feelings, or maybe I'm hurting the org's feelings, or maybe I'm actually hurting the image that the Portuguese scene has. And they're very, very toxic and very judgmental without actually looking at themselves first. But that's an issue, to be fair, across the world.
Yeah. Regarding the Portuguese community, does it also have an important role in the industry? I mean, you've already answered that. That the way the Portuguese scene is seen, it affects everyone.
I don't think the community is this toxic to make everybody think that the Portuguese scene is shit, to be fair. I think that maybe the best word is they will think that we are opinionated, and that's actually really good. It's great to see how, you know, like looking at the other side of what I just said before, it's great to see how people are very open to sharing their opinions raw, like with no filter and raw. And I think this is a great thing. And if we had more exposure, there will be more attention on the Portuguese scene going like, all right, listen, these guys are actually scrutinized down to their bone. And it's great to see that here players are actually good, and we should probably do scouting grounds, for instance, here for other academy teams, you know, like for U Masters or for the Academy LEC or whatnot. But unfortunately, it just stays very well tight-knit in our bubble of the Portuguese esports. And yeah, that's basically it.
So you think it's all about this exposition that we should have more in the rest of the U Masters, as you said before?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I like that it was a lot of noise, the fact that For the Win and EGN made it to the EU Masters play-in stage, but it was like 5 minutes and that's it. There was no more talk about it. I feel that we should have worked more off this and go like, hey, look at us. Look, we have two teams for play-in stages. Woo! Not just, yay, we made it to play-in stage. What's for lunch?
Yeah, exactly. Because what I feel is there is so much content, because I follow LEC since it began, basically. And there is so much content, and you get to know and you get to root for those orgs. And here, I don't feel that the orgs themselves want that, or to put outside that much of an image, that much of a, you know, that...
I think they do, but I think it's also very hard because the Portuguese scene is still developing. And if you go to a sponsor and you go like, hey, you know, sponsor my org because we're an esports org and we play for League of Legends or FIFA or Counter-Strike, and they look at you like, what's esports, friend? The actual notion of this word, what it means, I don't feel it's very well explained in Portugal right now, and it's not really milked for what it's worth.
Lastly, do you have any tips for someone who wants to join the industry, both as a player or as staff?
You really want to do this if you, like, you really, really want to do this if you want to be part of the scene, because it's a very difficult scene to make a name for yourself on, because, as I said, like, the community scrutinizes you more on the scene than they do on actual sports. Like in football, for instance, they're just busy in beating each other up, and that's it. And physical wounds always heal faster than mental wounds. And you need to have a very strong character. You need to see your goal and the desire to do this very clear in your head, so nothing else matters and you just go for it. It's survival of the fittest. There we go. That's like the best word ever. You need to be ready to give survival of the fittest a real meaning.
Do you have something else that you would like to share?
I think for everybody that wants to become a coach, my best advice is before you start, my best two advices actually are, before you start giving advice to someone, be willing to give advice to yourself and understand the fact that there is always something that you can improve. There's always something that you can be better. And I do think that having some shape or form of psychology studies will help you understand more to work with teenagers at the end of the day, because all of the players are teenagers, and the way teenagers function is much different from how children function or adults function. It's a lot of chemical reactions still going in their body and clouding their judgment. And you need to be aware of this so you know how to work the most efficient way possible with a player. So yeah, I'm actually quite happy that I did take those psychology courses when I went to university, and they did help a lot. They did help a lot, because without them, I wouldn't be able to understand what my players are going through and understand when I need to take a step back and bring in someone that actually knows how to help me solve a problem. And not just say, obviously, I'm the best, I know how to solve this problem, and then it all goes to shit from there.
Anna, thank you so much for your time and for this conversation. It was really a pleasure.
Same. Thank you very much for inviting me again.
If you have any questions you would like to hear discussed, feel free to suggest it. You can hear Call of Legends through Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Twitter @COL_podcast and stay tuned for the next episodes.